Hey guys, how's it going?
Hi, it's going well. How's it going for you?
Can't complain.
Good.
Monday night here.
Yeah.
Full week ahead. All the possibilities. We'll see.
Yeah, right. We're going to start this episode off like all episodes where we thank our sponsors. I'd like to take the time to thank Sabretooth. If you go to sabretooth.com, you can save 10% by using code WH. Get all your carving burrs and discs. I use them. You should too.
And I'll take a moment to thank our sponsor, Maritime Knife Supply, your one-stop shop for makers, your home for abrasives, steel, tools, and more. Save on shipping by using one supplier. Man, yeah. I'm getting bad. I'm still bad at this read. It's only been how long? But anyways, yeah.
Almost 2 years.
Lawrence is a good guy. He's been good to the community. So if you can support him because he supports us, you find them at maritimenicesupply.com and .ca.
So, Annette, what is going on?
Oh, man, what is not going on? Let's see. Keep them busy.
Busiest maker out there.
I don't know about that. I'd say busy person. I wish I was busy making, but really, really, it's just been so much going on with work, the new house build, and just other family commitments, I guess, and not as much time as I would like for making, I should say. Maybe more time than some people have, but left to me, I'd just be in the shop 24/7. But so I haven't had a ton of time lately to make all the things. So I've got piles and stacks of unfinished projects just waiting for me and calling my name. But yet I can't seem to stop starting new ones. So we'll see.
I see a couple times you've been on the Instagram doing a story and you're like, oh, here's a tool I found. Or, oh, here's a tool I found I bought. Haven't used it yet.
Yeah, I need to really stop getting on Facebook Marketplace because, like, at least I'm trying to think. I think I bought maybe one new tool in the last few months, like actually brand new. But then I've convinced myself somehow that, like, Facebook Marketplace is better because it's used and I'm saving something from like landfill or it's cheaper than it would be new, so it's okay. But I really need to not be buying any new tools right now. But I don't know, every so often you just come by a deal and you can't pass it up, right? But
yeah, that was me this past weekend.
What'd you get?
I found an estate sale, which was an old craft store that went out of business like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, and they were liquidating the contents of this place.
Oh, wow.
Apparently I missed it last weekend. They had it too, but it was this weekend too. I got a kick press like for leather working. I got some vices, a bunch of hand tools, some weird stuff that was there. They had some crazy things there. They had a wall of leather that hides, like a full hide was like $75.
Oh man.
and
damage there.
Well, I thought so too. Like when I walked in, I was like, oh, this is going to be an expensive day, but I didn't buy any leather. We'll see. It's still going to be there next weekend. This place was jam-packed full of stuff. And it was like going back in time walking into this old craft store.
So why was it like out of commission? Like whenever it closed, why wouldn't they just have sold the stuff that was there?
I don't know.
Okay.
Cool. I think the parents who ran it had passed away. Maybe. I don't know the story.
Okay.
But the daughter who now is in possession of this place wants to empty it. So she's doing a sale, but they did some crazy stuff there. That like they had a lot of like engravings and that type of thing. Like it wasn't your typical craft store per se. Like they would make your signs for your business and all that stuff. So they had a little bit of everything there.
Nice.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would do some damage at a place like that.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything. That's my nirvana.
Yeah. Estate sales are worse than Facebook Marketplace, I say.
You know, a couple of local maker friends have like been showing me their recent estate sale finds and like auctions. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really gotten into those yet, but like I'm curious, but the last thing I need is to find yet another opportunity to convince myself that I need to buy more stuff, right? And it's like, oh, look at this, like antique 1910 hand plane in mint condition that I found in this state. I'm like, how do you find these things, first of all? Because all I see the few times I do try to look is junk, right? And then some people just have a knack, I think, for finding the good deals and the good stuff. And I'm choosing not to go down the estate sale and auction rabbit hole right now because I need to get myself in control.
Auctions are dangerous if you don't set a price limit. Because you get into that bidding war and you're just like, let me go. So I gave up on auctions. Then I find people spend way too much on things at auction because they get into that turmoil. Like, oh, now it's mine. I have to win it, you know, and they keep bidding it up.
Yeah.
But estate sales, sometimes I'll go and not find anything. But when you do find that honey hole, it's like I'm buying tools I don't even need just because it's a good deal or
yep.
You'll never see it again, that type of thing.
Yep. Cool.
So you're in the midst of building a new shop.
A new house, yes. That will have a garage that will be a shop. That's correct.
Congrats on the new house.
Thank you.
But I'm interested in the shop.
More as so. Am I, if I'm quite honest, but...
Yeah. Did you design this house?
Sort of. So I'm working with a local custom builder here in Cincinnati who they'd kind of had a proposed plan for the house on this lot. I guess it wasn't an empty lot. There was a house there originally that the builder had bought and had like, hey, here's the proposed design at this price. But then it's like custom built to suit, so you can change whatever you want kind of within that. So that's kind of what I'm doing. So I didn't design it from scratch. I chose this one because I really liked the bones of like the original kind of plan that the builder had anyway. So I just made some specific changes like, okay, add an extra foot to the basement height because that's a do it once and cry once for the price of it, right? And the original garage, for example, was only a 2-car. Okay, let's make it 3 and just do that right now. So I have more space for the shop and just some other tweaks that I did around the original plan. But most of the original design concept was the builder's. I just customized it to suit what I want and what I can afford right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So now that you, what are you in now? A 2-car garage?
Yeah, it's a 2-car detached garage behind my house, which honestly, for the area I live, is great because I live in an older part of town. I think my house was originally built in like 1914. So the garage is definitely not an original structure. And it's just a cinder block, uninsulated, you know, plain detached from the house. It's great that I have it and it's been awesome and I'm super spoiled because some of the houses on my street, honestly, don't even have garages at all. But you know, I feel like I've outgrown it, the space here. And I just want like a house that was planned for this century, right? not 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward for sure to the additional space in the shop because even though the garage is 3-car, I still don't plan to park inside. So it's just gaining roughly 50%, maybe more shop space. Really looking forward to that. That's exciting because I'm bursting at the seams right now.
Are you looking to fill that with additional tools or just spread your tools out?
I really hope not, but I'm hoping to spread tools out.
Your acquisition syndrome is going to real fast.
Exactly. So I'm hoping to spread things out where I have like a good flow and I can kind of convince myself or maybe start to think of like, all right, one in, one out kind of thing, right? Okay, maybe I sell this thing and I get that thing. Instead of just adding more. I think in the space I have right now, I've been able to, with the exception of the bandsaw that I actually have 2 of, everything else is like, oh, but I need this thing because I don't have anything that does this, which is not true. There's different ways to do lots of things, but that's how I justify it to myself. Anyway, but I feel like there's a tipping point, right? Where it's like, all right, you really don't, you're not a production shop in it. You really do not need any more tools. So I'm thinking I'm there, and anything I get from now on will either be like smaller things that I can
or an upgrade.
Make room for or an upgrade, right? So that's the plan. We'll see. You know.
That's awesome. I'm jealous.
I'm excited. I am. The I'm two things. What was that?
I said I'm in a 1-car garage, and Tony's in a 12x12. We're tight quarters over here.
Oh man, I can't even like fathom that right now, which is crazy, because my garage right now is, I'd say, like, I don't know, 19 by 20, maybe 20 by 20. And it's just packed. There's maybe 2 feet of space all around the table saw that I can actually walk around. And everything else is just like tools against the wall, the table saw and outfeed in the middle. Tools are now even against the garage door because I ran out of space. So the garage door, it can open, but then there's like tools right when you get there, which is fine because there's a side door that I usually come in and out of. So unless I'm bringing like sheet goods or like large pieces of lumber, the garage door is always closed. But it's just so tight in there right now that I'm so excited to be moving. And like the new garage has 10-foot ceilings. And like it's drywall and it's all going to be painted white at least to start. So like just even just the feeling of more space is like, this is going to be good. So I'm excited.
When you do make the move, do you have to move in a certain like time window, like one day? Or do you have like
time
frame to move everything over and kind of set it up the way you want as you move things in?
I have some time. I'm going to need to set myself a schedule because honestly, I don't even have a date right now on when I move in, right? The house is almost ready. In my mind, it could be ready within the month, but right now the best date I have from the builder is October sometime. But I think I'm going to rent my current house out. So it's just a matter of like, all right, how long do I want to be carrying two mortgages without additional rental income coming in for the other one, right? So I planned for like a month or two just so I didn't have, because I didn't have a date from the builder, so I don't want to like force myself into a situation where I'm rushing to move and all that stuff. But I also don't want to be like 6 months, you know, dilly-dallying, just waiting for or trying to get organized, because I will blow through 6 months easily just convincing myself I need to do this and that. So I'm going to have to, once I have a date where the house is ready, I'll probably give myself like 45 days or 60 days or something max to say, okay, you need to be moved by here and sort out whatever you need to do. Because there's a few things like installing a mini split in the garage. If I want to do epoxy floors before I move stuff in, I have to do that after the builder turns over the house to me. And some other stuff, right? Anything that, okay, do it before you get all your stuff in there because it's the easiest time to. I need to do all that before I can actually move.
If you do the epoxy, are you doing the epoxy by yourself?
I haven't decided that. I didn't want to because I know it's going to be a lot of work, but I got a quote from a vendor locally and I was shook for like, when I requested the quote, I was like, oh, okay, maybe, I don't know what it would be, 3,000 and I'll try to
negotiate. That's what I expected when I moved
in.
That's
what I thought. And no, it started at like 3X that. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So I was like, no, at those prices, obviously I'm not going to hire that out. We don't have that kind of money over here. But I have another maker, because I posted, I think, a story about it a few weeks back. And a local maker person reached out to me and said, hey, I know this other guy who has done some stuff like this before. I don't know what he's going to charge you, but it should be much less than that. So I actually need to reach out to that person and see if like they can do it within the realm of reality and the price ranges that I'm at. Flooring for a garage. And if they can, I would rather have someone else do it. If not, then I've resigned myself to either just keep the concrete floor. It's brand new. It's not stained. Like, really, this is a vanity choice. Or just paint it, right? I think, like you had suggested, do like an epoxy paint kind of thing. Because, again, the one-person shop, I'm not dragging heavy machinery across the ground. Like, it's going to be fine.
I did the epoxy paint here. Because I did the same thing. I got the quote, and I was like, whoa. And one of the things, the only reason why I'm bringing it up is one of the things when I got the quote, they kept asking, is it new concrete or is it old?
Good.
And there's a timetable where you can't coat it when it's new.
Yeah.
With the epoxy.
Yeah. So this floor was poured back in February. So I think we're past that. That's what the guy said, the one that came to give me the ridiculous quote. So he wasn't concerned about the age of the concrete. So.
But then there's like the do-it-yourself kits. And, like, you can get the Rust-Oleum one.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, Rock Solid or something they call it?
Yep.
Which looks cool, but they peel, you know, from what I understand.
So what I've heard or what I read is unless you grind the floors, it's going to peel, even if the concrete is new, right? Like, I think they usually just, a lot of people would just do like the chemical etch or whatever.
Yeah.
But supposedly that's not enough to get like good adhesion and a floor that won't peel. And it's the grinding part that I really don't want to do myself. So because that just sounds dusty and messy.
So I did the epoxy paint. It's like a garage paint. I think I sent you the can, right?
Yeah, you sent me a picture of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it peels under the lawnmower, like it comes in with the tires. And it's not often. I just go down there and I paint it and it matches. And it's good. If I drop something on that stains it, I just put more on top. That's good. The color always matches. You know? But I will say, even just with the paint, the cleanup for the dust is so much easier.
Okay.
It just feels cleaner than that concrete with all the little porous areas.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how much you vacuum, there's always more dust and more dust. When I did this, I feel like when I clean it or leaf blow it out, it's clean.
Yeah.
There's nothing on it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that because the shop, it's fully insulated. It's going to be conditioned. I don't have a lawnmower that I'm planning to store in there. There's not going to be cars like trucking snow and ice or whatever in like your typical garage floor conditions. So like, I feel like even the paint will be hard pressed to peel under those conditions. But, you know, I live to be proven wrong. but we'll see.
It is a garage floor too. I mean, how precious do you need to be about it?
Exactly, right? So we'll see. If I reach out to this dude locally and he's got a reasonable price on the floor, I'll just bite the bullet and do it now, right? At a reasonable cost and just get it over with. But if even that is like more money than I'm willing or able to spend right now, then I'll probably just paint it and call it done.
Use that epoxy paint. It's great.
Yeah.
And if you get a standard color, then it matches.
Exactly. And it's all like, if I run out, I can get more and touch up whenever I need to. So, yeah.
I reached out to that Chill company, Chill Epoxy. Canadian epoxy company.
That's funny.
And they make a floor coating for garages.
Huh. Okay.
Or, you know, concrete flooring epoxy.
Mm-hmm.
They have like these speckled like pigments. Like if you wanted it to be glittery or whatever, all different colors, and you put it on, you could swirl it around. I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know? And the guy kept saying, oh, yeah, we're cheap. Well, I'll send you a quote. And I told him how much I needed for how many square feet my garage was.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back, and it was in the thousands just for the epoxy for me to do it.
Yikes.
And I'm like, is this, like, I don't need this specialty tri-color stuff. Just give me, like, the plain Jane one color. He's like, that's for gray. And I was like, okay, I'm done with you. Goodbye.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I mean, unless you have, I'm trying to think of under what conditions a garage floor needs to be that expensive or needs to cost that much. And I can't.
If you had a bunch of like finished hot rods or fancy car, like a couple Ferraris or something, and you had this big warehouse or something, and you're going to show it off and have events there or something like that. Sure.
If you had all that, then the prices we're talking about would not be a concern anyway.
Right. Yeah, I think that's that's the type of people who are doing these things.
Yeah.
Or if you're running a retail store with a concrete floor and you want to finish it so it looks nice and all that makes sense to me. But there needs to be a better homeowner option, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. AC is the other thing that I'm going to have to do before I move in, because the good thing of insulating it is it's fully insulated, but then it's summer, so it's hot. My backup plan right now is one of those DIY units. But again, I got another contact of a local guy who will do who does AC like split installs. So I need to call that person and see if they'll give me a reasonable price. Because I think the estimate I got from, I forget, maybe it was the builder who reached out to a different contractor for me just to say, hey, how much would it be? Or to the company who did the install was like, I don't know, $6,500 or $7,000 for a mini split for a three-car garage. I'm like, no. We're not. And when they did the power for the garage, like there's a dedicated circuit already there in place. It's an exterior wall. Like there's no, you know, oh, it's a difficult install, so the labor cost is high. So I'm sitting there like, is that normal? I don't know, because that's the unit is not even a third of that, right? I don't know. I just thought it was really expensive, and I don't have any money for an AC.
I looked into getting one for mine, and it the unit itself is like $2,000, $2,500 or something like that.
I've seen them anywhere from like 18 to 25. So yeah.
Yeah, but then you're basically drilling a hole and hooking it up and then plugging it in.
Exactly.
Like it's not that hard.
I hate to say that because like it feels like devaluing the work of people in the HVAC trade or someone in the HVAC trade, which I don't want to do. I'm sure there's situations where there's a lot more involved in installing a mini split, but the whole point of mini splits these days is like they're so simple, they even make do it yourself versions of it. So,
right.
But anyway,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's involved. I've never installed one, but it looks pretty easy from the videos I've watched.
Exactly. So I've seen videos and I've talked to a couple of people who have done several different versions of the do-it-yourself ones, and theirs are still working. So I'm like, okay, it's like if folks are figuring it out, it can't be that complicated. So that's one that I will probably do it myself, unless, again, I could find somebody who could do it at a reasonable price. What I think is a reason, what I'm willing to pay, I should say. Maybe that's not reasonable, but
yeah, I think for a lot of them, it's just they have a blanket price, and they probably make on most and they lose on a few.
Well, it's that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. But what was she quoted? $7,000, right?
Yeah, $6,500. Yeah.
$6,500 for a 1-day install on a $2,000 item.
Exactly. Like it's not even it can't be a day, right? Like if the circuit is there, so there's
he charges you a day.
He hanged the thing. Like it's hours, marks. Like this.
Well, even if you're having to put the circuit in, is not
right.
It's not that big a job.
Right. But anyway.
Did you run 220 out to this new garage?
Yeah. So it has both 220 and 110. So the whole house has a 400 amp service, and then I've got 200 for the house and 200 for the garage. I have no idea what I'm going to do with 200, but it was one of those things that like, all right, how much is it to do it now? Let's just go do it now.
I'm jealous. Like,
my current 1914 house, when I bought the house, I had a 100 amp panel for the whole house plus the garage. And then I think the max I could go up to was 125. And like, that's it.
You have breakers
here.
Yeah,
you have breakers or fuses.
I think they're breakers. I don't mess around a lot with electrical, but they're breakers.
That's a common thing here. Knob and tube wire, and the fuses are getting phased out.
They put the breakers in before I bought the house. So they did do some updating to the electrical. Oh, okay. For some reason, I'm still stuck on the max.
Yeah, when I bought my old house, it was, you know, 100 years old or whatever, and when I bought it, they had to upgrade the electrical system from the fuse to a breaker so they could sell it. Okay. Then when I sold, I had to get rid of all the knob and tube, which was ridiculously expensive for a house that's been there for 100 years with no problems. But in order for me to sell it, and it wasn't like it was code, it was the mortgage company wouldn't give the buyer a mortgage if they were buying a house with knob and tube.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see a lot of that here. I looked at purchasing an apartment one time, like an income property. It was years ago, and they actually had knob and tube coming out of the wall and having that bare wire, but it was in like an entryway, like 12 feet up. And that was okay. But I think it was abandoned at this point. But
yeah.
That's what they do with a lot of it, just abandon it and
run
new stuff.
Yep, I definitely, so my detached garage definitely has some like knob and tube wiring that's unused, but just there. They just left it, didn't take it out, and just ran new stuff before I bought it. But yeah, good times. But yeah, so no, lots of decision making with house stuff and garage and planning and all kinds of stuff just going on, and it's it feels like it shouldn't be a lot, but there's just a mental toll of all that stuff to do. And don't even get me, I'm trying not to think about packing, because that's going to be a disaster. Yeah. Anyway, save that for another day.
Yeah, I'm with you. We've talked about a few things. Like, kids are, my oldest will be 15 next week. Anyways, we're recording at a different time. She'll be 15 when we're recording here now, after we record. But yeah, she's, so they'll be out of the house soon. My youngest is 13, so she's not that far behind. So we've talked about what we do next. If we do build, like, I want a bigger shop, but I want a shop that maybe I'll soundproof it out back so that I can do my smithing work without, you know, do it at normal hours and nobody's going to bother me. And then maybe you could go out there and do finish work or grinding or that kind of stuff without too much worry later on at night. But it's going to cost me some because I'm going to have to soundproof it, I'm sure.
Yep.
Just move out in the middle of nowhere.
I was going to say, are you in a residential kind of?
Yeah. So my shop is like 20 feet from my neighbor's living room. So it's pretty close.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I was like. That's kind of, but part of it is like, do we really want to move? Do we want to move? Like, right now, with the subdivision I'm in, I drive up the hill and there's a grocery store. Well, that grocery store is turned into my convenience store. So I don't go to like a 7-Eleven type store anymore. I go up to the grocery store, get whatever I need.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of nice.
And yeah, I definitely am all about city living.
I'm a country boy. I grew up, my parents still live on the same, they had 14 acres where they're at. And you can't see another building from their house. Like the way the lay of the land, like they have neighbors, but you can't see the neighbor up the road. You can't see the neighbor down the road. Like there's no one across the street from them. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, until I think I was in high school when we got the road got paved. It was dirt before that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was a country boy.
Still
in.
No, even like my new house, the lot is like one of those skinny rectangular like lots, super small. And from the house to my property line on the one side, I think I have like, I don't know, 8 feet. Before the neighbor's property line starts, and then they have another 8 feet to their house on that side. So it's like jam-packed, which for me is good because I'm not trying to mow like massive lawns or any lawn for that matter. So like I don't, you know, when I put the garage in, at first the builder was like, oh, but you're not going to have any yard. I'm like, that's kind of the point. Like I'm trying to get away from mowing and all kinds of stuff. So no, it's super tiny. I don't even know what I would do with acres. I think the lot's probably, I don't know, 0.2 acres maximum, something like that, which is just fine by me. But yeah, it's 14 acres. So is it farm? Is it fields?
When I was a kid, so dad had a hobby farm, so he had a few cattle there, probably okay. 10 or 12 kind of thing. Since then, he's stopped doing that. So that's kind of fields, but it's starting to grow up a little bit. He mows it every now and again to keep the trees from growing up, but it's just a old dirty field now.
Yeah, that's what I wonder about when I hear about people having like huge lots like that, right? So what I've seen is most people will have the house, and then you might fence like a backyard area that's decent size that actually gets mowed, and the rest of it is just like wooded. Yeah, but like, are you going hiking out there? Like, what are you doing with that if you're not farming? That's.
I think for a lot of people, it's space. They just want space.
Yeah.
They want to. They just, you know, they just want no people.
No people there, but they're not actually using the land. That's interesting.
People free. That's kind of what they're after. 10 acres
at a minimum.
What was that?
10 acres at a minimum.
10. Okay, to do what? That's like for what?
To keep distance away from people.
I think like an acre is more than enough distance from people.
No.
No?
It's not.
Okay.
So I have an acre now.
Isn't it?
And I don't have like neighbors. Tony's been here, right?
Yeah.
but next to me is a 5-acre lot, and they just got approval to put 11 homes on them on that one 5-acre lot. And like, if I want to put up a shed in my backyard, I have to be 120 feet from my back property line. But with this new development that's going in, the back of their house is going to be 25 feet from my fence.
So they got a variance or something?
Yeah, on my side yard. So now 25 feet from my property line is the back of their house. I got to go.
And how far is that from your house?
What do you mean?
How far is the property line from the back of your actual house?
Oh, this is on the side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's going to be 5 houses along the side yard of mine. And they're all going to be 25 feet from my property line.
Add some trees. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Or move, which is probably what I'll do.
Yes, move. Find those 10 acres somewhere and move.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'd be afraid of, like, I know I wouldn't use the land, right? So, like, if I was going to go hike in my wooded area, like, God knows what's growing out there or living out there. Like, I don't know. Anyway, that's not for me. I like space, but, like, indoor space. Outdoor, I don't really care about. To me, outdoor, the smaller, the better, less maintenance, less weeds. One of the things I decided in the new place is I'm not having grass outside anywhere. Like, I slowly killed all the grass that I had here and put in beds and rocks and whatnot around. And I just decided from the get-go, we're just not even going to have grass at all. So I'm really excited about that and not having to mow anything, period. So yeah, like, you can't do that with 10 acres, right? That's just not.
Yeah. I mean, 10 wooded acres would be cool.
Yeah. When you get
enough space where I could just build a barn on or build a couple outbuildings. What was that, Tony? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I lost it.
The no grass situation?
Yeah, like for most people that are, I guess my experience, I mean, mom and dad's place was all wooded, but my grandfather had, I think he had well over 100, both grandfathers, I think, had well over 100 acres each.
Wow.
And yeah, you just kind of, there's some woodlot management when you get into that too. Like, you'll have, if you're doing it right, you should be going out and taking out like your mature trees and allowing the younger trees to come up.
Okay.
And that way your lot's always producing. So you actually get your firewood and stuff without having to do anything more than just harvest from your own lot.
Firewood's pretty cheap these days. You don't have to buy 10 acres to do that.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think they need a little more.
It's one of those things. It's more of just, for some people, it would be their making. It's what keeps them busy, keeps them sane kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. Like for my grandfathers, like they would, retirement age, that would have been what kept them busy. Yep. One didn't live as long as the other. The one lived to 93, one lived to 63. So.
Interesting. Yeah. Now I'll stick with my small, no yard house, all house situation. Yeah.
Well, that's where I'm at with it too. Like my intent with what I do in my shop is like, that's my retirement. That's my tinker. And that's my, you know, I plan to be done work at 55. I don't want to be, you know, still working shift work at 55 plus. So
get in.
I'm ornery as it is, 55 years old and work shift work. I'll murder might happen.
Well, it's funny. I don't know. Good times. Who won the Make What You Fear contest this year? I missed that.
We had a bunch of winners this year.
How's that work?
We had a bunch of prizes, so we spread it out. Because everyone made such drastically different stuff.
Okay. I have to go get caught up on that. Because I remember thinking about, oh, maybe I'll enter it, then I forget what happened. That was a while back, too. And I just never...
Yeah, it ended in February, I think.
That was like March.
Could have been March.
March or April, even.
Been a while.
A long time ago, yeah. Now, lost sight of that one. Never actually went back to see one. Oh, well.
Yeah, I think for next year, we'll have to do it a little more streamlined somehow.
Like pick a category of what to make, or what do you mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
We keep it so open-ended, so like you can try with anything.
And
that makes it very difficult. I don't know what Tony's thoughts are on it.
Oh, we get a lot of questions, that's for sure, because of how open we try and leave it. But I kind of like leaving it open. I mean, I don't know. It's not a...
I'll tell you what, it's not an
easy thing to come up with either.
We will run it, but you can be the judge. How's that?
I'm a good judge of things. No, I'm kidding. I think what I like about I like competitions where there's a winner, right? So like, the rules going in are clear. Okay, there's going to be five winners based on X. And then it's like, okay, then you know what to expect and what you're getting into. So I'm curious how people felt if that wasn't clear going in, and then afterwards, if there were multiple winners, and it's like, okay.
Well, we never call it a contest. We only ever call it a challenge.
True. That is true. That is true.
Never
a contest. I don't know.
Yeah. And to be...
You want to play semantics, you're not going to win with me in that.
And to be as clear as you're saying, like, we would have to, like, basically have our sponsors lined up like right now, like what we're doing kind of lined up in the next month or so.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there. We're like the day we announce, we're like, ah, this is what we're gonna do.
Hey, it's a good thing. It's fun. Feel free to keep doing it. It's working. I like it because like it feeds my it's not ADHD tendency, but it feeds my like, ooh, I've been wanting to try this new thing. I'm gonna go. Here's the reason I can go buy now these new supplies and tools, because I need to go do this.
Yeah. So I'm getting the theme that you're a gear junkie like most makers.
Yes. Yes, I am.
You're also a class junkie.
A what junkie?
Class. Don't you take a lot of
classes? Yeah, I do. I do. I'm like addicted to taking classes now, I think.
I'm a huge fan of that. I'm a huge fan of in-person instruction.
Yeah. It's awesome. Like, I mean, half the things I do, could I go on the internet and figure it out? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same, you know, and like, it's just not the same. I don't know. And there's something about like the in-person instruction that I just enjoy it. I do it really because I enjoy it. No, it's not like, oh, I can't learn on my own by doing. I can. I just find it more enjoyable to learn from someone else and get a chance to ask the questions and learn from the mistakes and make some of the mistakes firsthand and see how people problem solve things in real time, you know? I love, that's probably one of my favorite things right now is taking classes.
Yeah. I'm actually, we've talked about it here before, but, I'm actually waiting for the 2024 class list to come out for the, New England School of Metalwork. I'm going to take another one this year coming. Because you're right. Like a lot of it's just having the mistakes not cost you while you're in the shop is kind of a big thing for a lot of like hobbyists. Like we don't have the time to make the mistakes in a lot of ways. So, I mean, we're going to make mistakes, but it's if you can save yourself, you know, one or two or three or four, it's all the better.
Yep. Fully agree.
That and the instant feedback is like immeasurable amount of whatever quality that is to the class.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
Like if you're making a mistake in the process of making it, the instructor can come over and be like, oh, don't do that.
Right.
Sometimes it's even like the instructor tells you the class is all there and you're next to somebody and you're about to make the mistake and the guy next to you goes, they said do this, not that. And you're like, oh yeah, that's right. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Where when you're at home, you're already down the wrong path. Something's wrong, not working, you can't figure out what it is, and then it's in your head that I'm doing it right, you know?
Exactly.
Then you're on the internet trying to figure it out, and that's all that time.
Right.
It's a lot less time to drive to the class than it is to...
I totally agree. And I think for me, COVID maybe is when I kind of really made the switch, because like there was a couple of years there where pre-COVID I used to travel a lot. Like for fun, but there were a few years there where you couldn't or didn't go anywhere really, right? And like I live here in Cincinnati, the place where I take most of my classes is just like an hour and a half away in Indiana, and they were open for most of COVID. I think the first few months where everything shut down, they were shut down, but then they opened back up with kind of the safe practices and all the stuff that, that folks were doing back then to manage all that. And so it was like, all right, I've got all these weeks of vacation. I can't go anywhere. Maybe I'll go take a class. That's kind of how it started. It's like, okay, well, that was fun. I'm going to take another one and another one. And now I think I use like half my vacation time in the year taking classes in different places. And I just haven't gotten away from that yet because it's just, I'm having fun with it. So no, I enjoy it a lot. This last week I was actually learning soap baking.
I saw that.
And I thought it was so much fun. Like I studied chemical engineering. So it was a mix of like fun and making and some of like the chemistry stuff from way back when. And it was just a number of different areas of interests, I would say, being able to combine all of that and like pretty things and pretty scents and just, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I would say more than I thought, because when I signed up for it, something was like, I think I'm going to like that. But I was a bit surprised at how much I enjoyed the class.
So what is the school? What's the school you go to?
Where I go most of the time is Mark Adams School of Woodworking over in Indiana. I've taken a few classes down in Pinecroft Woodworking School there in Berea, Kentucky. It's a smaller school there, but they do a lot of really cool stuff with like green wood. And like bark to furniture kind of stuff. So I've done some like hand carving stuff there. I haven't made it for any of their like green furniture classes yet. I usually do like weekend stuff there. And then I do the longer stuff at Mark Adams. But yeah, it's fun.
That green wood furniture stuff looks cool.
It does. I'm doing a stool class, although I don't know if that one's going to be green wood. Because here in across the river in Kentucky, Lust Art Press, what's his name? Chris Schwartz and Megan Fitzpatrick have their storefront down there. And I know at least Megan teaches at Pinecroft a bit. And he's doing like a staked stool class at Mark Adams in the fall that I'm going to attend. I don't think that class is using greenwood, but that style of stool usually you see a lot of people do with greenwood. So I'm looking forward to taking that and seeing if I don't maybe take that into like doing more stuff with greenwood here and some more carving, and who knows, we'll see where it takes me. I don't know.
Very cool.
Yep.
I'm jealous.
No, it's fun. I definitely feel privileged to have found kind of that passion and be able to take the classes, right? I know a lot of people who would love to and can't, whether it's, you know, commitment to kids or whatever other situations. I'm glad I have the opportunity, and I plan to make the best of every minute of it.
Yeah, I don't know what classes we have around here. I've never really looked.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken some, like the welding class and that thing. But like for actual woodworking, I know there's a place I could go. It's an hour and a half away, and that would be cool. But now with everything going on at the Blackthorn, like all the Maker Camp events, I just go there, you know?
Yep.
So I should venture out into other stuff too. There's enough going on up there that I keep going up there. So
when I feel bummed, I'm not going to be able to make it to Maker Camp this year. I know. I had the date all blocked since after last year's camp, but I've got work stuff came up and I can't get out of it. So I'm gonna miss it, but I'm going to Austin for the Woodworkers Festival here at the end of this month, and that's gonna be my first time there. So I'm trying to branch into new things, right? Because like, you know, I've been taking classes at Mark Adams for the last like 4 or 5 years, which is great, and I don't plan to stop that, but I want to like venture out and see like what else is happening in other places. So I'm looking forward to the Texas Woodworkers Festival, and I know they're doing some instruction during that. It's not like the full class, but at least just to see some different people and learn some different things. I'm looking forward to that because I've just been doing the, okay, Workbench Con, Maker Camp, and then my classes at Mike Adams. But it's like, okay, how do I venture out a bit? And ideally, next year, I'd do some international stuff too, but who knows? We'll see.
That'd be cool.
I think that would be cool.
We've talked about going to... What's that thing called, Tony?
Maker Central, yeah.
Yeah.
That's still on the list. That might still happen.
It might, but we'll see. But yeah, I've never been to the Austin thing, the woodworking festival.
I will let you know what I think of it after I go. This is my first one. So.
Sounds cool.
It seems, I think until last year, I didn't even know it existed. And then last year, I think maybe it was either Bao or Matt, somebody, one of the makers who lives actually in Houston, had posted something about it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Because I went in Austin, actually.
Was last year the first year? Because that's when I heard about it.
No, I don't think it was the first year. I think it's been going on for a while.
Okay.
But it was the first year I heard about it.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that sounds fun. And, you know, always fun to go back to Austin and try to catch up with some friends. Mm-hmm. I say that. I'm probably not going to do that. But at least I tell myself I'm going back. I have the chance to catch up with some friends if I want to. So I'm looking forward to that one. The other thing I'm going to do is Handworks in Amana, Iowa. I'd never heard of that until recently either. But I am going to go check that out because I was like, okay, let me go see what's happening here. So I'm looking forward to thinking too.
That used to be a thing, and then it went away for a while.
Yeah, it paused for a while during COVID, and like it came back, I think last year maybe it came back, and like it's now like back in a bigger way, if you will, this year, because now people are aware that it's back.
Yeah, it's back in full swing.
Right, something like that. So I'm looking forward to that. I feel like that's just a different, because I mean, I'm not like a hand tool only woodworker, but I try to mix things up. And so I just want to see like, okay, what's going on in hand tool space, and see what cool stuff is out there. So I'm looking forward to that as well, which, you know, we'll see. Something new.
That's awesome. What? Tony, what do you think? We thank those patrons?
Yes, we can do that. All right. So here we go. We got Corey of Odyssey CNC, Christy of Twisted Twine, Annette of 513 Woodworks, Full Steam Designs by Chris Powell, Lillian Archer Photography, David Beckwith Makes, NB Wood Finery. In our top tier, we have Espoke Studios, Danelle Smith Christian, Brian Drennan, Lawrence of MaritimeKniveSupply.com, Ed Johns of ButtJoints.com, Adam of Uncle Sam Metalworks. Wow, this is a bad one today. Vincent Ferrari of Digitally Creative, Brian Housefort of Workfort Podcast, Art Gino Sario, Matt of Wood Mustache,
Dave and Joanna Widerworks.
Woo! No, I just skipped Brad. That's why.
Brad of like, Brad's Customs.
Brad of Brad's Customs. David and Joanna of Widerworks. Chad of Chad's Custom Creations. Ryan of Gnomehammer Forge. David of DW Wood Builds. Matt of First Duke Construction. And Tony of Kodamo Design. Thank you all. I apologize for tripping over every name, but
thank you all.
Some days you're the bug, some days you're the windshield.
That's a nice long list of sponsors you've got there, our patrons.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride with that. We're quite surprised to how well it's done.
Yeah. It's humbling.
Mm.
Is that the right word for that? It's an honor. It's humbling.
Yeah.
What would be the right word?
I think you're
all
in
of those?
I think you're in the ballpark.
Both of those work.
But yeah.
Both of those work.
I feel like I'm missing the right word, though. But you guys all understand what I'm saying.
Maybe.
Maybe. But speaking of some of our patrons, we have the Gnomehammer waffle thing going on. If you are a patron, you're automatically entered. If you want to become a patron, you can do that. If you want to become a patron of Ryan over at Gnomehammer Forge, you can do that and get entries. And you can just buy tickets as well. I believe he's giving away another hammer this month. So get in on that. Those hammers are looking good. You ever try blacksmithing, Annette?
No, other than, you know, tinkering for a minute or two during maker camp.
No, I have not.
No?
So I don't like being hot. And it's like an upper body workout that I know I can't sustain for any reasonable amount of time. So the one, and I forget, some little hook thing they were practicing and having folks try to make at Maker Camp. And I was like, this is a lot of work. So I can't imagine actually trying to do
a real...
I think it's similar to like woodworking. Like it's operation based. Like you have to do certain things before you can move on to the next step. So when you skip something, then you're just like, well, how do I get the hammer into it to do that now? It's like, well, you don't, because you have to go backwards. So one nice thing with steel though is that I've done that before. We're making something and you curl it over and you're like, that's like the taper's not right or something, and it's something that you can't hit with it being in a curve or whatever. Then you just heat it back up, straighten it out, and go again. I've done that many times.
You do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's not really an area that I've been curious enough. I wanted to try like in a maker camp kind of setting, but it wasn't one that I went, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole now. Again, that could change in the future. Who knows? But for now.
Yeah. It's an expensive rabbit hole just to even sit there with a hammer, anvil, and forge. It's not like buying a circular saw.
Yeah, I'll bet. And I as close as my house is to my neighbors, I'd probably get murdered if I took up and started doing that out in the yard.
Yeah, I had a good conversation with my neighbor before I really got going, and he's like, all he's ever said is hammer away. So I'm like, all right. And that's the guy whose living room is 20 feet away. But I also am not out there every day. Probably been a few months since I've been out there, to be honest.
Unreal, Tommy.
I know.
Unreal.
I play a blacksmith on the internet. This is the best I can do.
Hey, life happens.
Unlike Annette, if you are coming to Maker Camp, there is the Maker Camp Maker Swap going on. So show us what you got. Bring your best skills for that, and whatever you're making for it, use the hashtag Maker Camp Maker Swap, and that should be fun.
Way to make me feel bad.
No, you're doing enough in the maker community. You don't need to do that one too, but you will be missed. I will shed a tear later that we won't get to see you this year.
Yeah, I'll shed a tear that I won't be. I really, really was looking forward to it.
There's no guilt trip, but I mean, it is in October on a 3-day weekend. You probably
literally
won't be
out of the country the week before and the week after, so I cannot be there even if I wanted to.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a fair excuse.
You at least going anywhere is fun?
It's a work trip, so not really.
Oh, okay.
I've been there a dozen times. So not really, no.
That makes it worse. I feel bad for you now. I feel bad for giving you the guilt trip.
I know. Yeah, but no, that's Mexico's always next year, I guess.
Yeah. Or you could always go to one of the mini weekends. I call them mini weekends. They're still weekends, but
yeah. I see, like, I know Dre and Lucas and you, and I see a lot of folks like post from those events, but like it's never really clear to me what's happening there. So one of the things I love about Maker Camp is just the variety of different things that are happening at the same time. The weekend ones seem to be super focused on like one thing.
Yeah. So they put in a makerspace.
Ah, did they know?
So there's a makerspace for the winter, right? And that's where Dre taught epoxy. Kerr just did a weekend of silversmithing.
Mm.
There was a leather class. So it's a little more involved. And there was another class. I think it was like axe making or something. It's a little more in-depth. Like you learn a lot more for that weekend than you could at Maker Camp, because Maker Camp is like roll through for an hour, and the next crowd comes in. Yeah. It's like exposure. And they're fun weekends, and that's like typically in the winter, like February-ish, right? But then like there's the big blacksmith event, which is called the Group Forge, and they don't know what they're going to build until pretty much a week or two before, but it's you all get together and you build one thing together. Tony does that one. He did the what was the first one? A fire pit?
The fire pit, and then the second one was a bench.
Yeah, and now those are like right outside the pavilion, so there's like this huge fire pit. How big was it, Tony?
The fire pit's 6-foot diameter.
Yeah, it's a 6-foot diameter fire pit.
Well, you were there last year, were you not? For 22?
For me?
Yeah. Yeah, you were. We were talking at...
At Baker Camp. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the big fire pit.
The big fire pit. That's what we built.
Oh, so that was from... Oh, okay, cool. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so then this year we built... it's about a three-person bench. Well, depending on who's sitting on it, but... it's three Keiths wide.
It is, yeah.
So that's... And taller than Keith, too, because he can't touch his feet when he's sitting on
it. Yeah, my feet don't touch the
ground. It's all right.
It's a big bench.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, that's interesting. But, and this is all in the winter.
No, that one is, yeah.
Yeah, first one was winter because, I mean, it was a snowstorm. The second one was a little bit more towards the spring, a little bit better weather. So I think they've kind of decided to move those out of the March and more into like April, I think it was.
Yeah.
So I think they were there the last weekend of March, first week of April kind of thing. So
got it.
And then I just did the timber in, was it last weekend? Yeah, last weekend.
So what is that? I've heard about
like a month ago as this airs, but that is, were you there at the Maker Camp when they had the pavilion?
Yep.
They built that pavilion thing.
Mm-hmm.
That they did like a timbering event prior to Maker Camp, and then you cut all the joinery and you test fit it, and then it's all green wood, and then it dries out until Maker Camp, and then they assemble it. Last year they did a covered bridge over the Duck Pond.
Okay.
Right? So it's like all timber frame bridge. And then this year we did another like pavilion thing, which will be like an outdoor kitchen, where they'll do like smokers under there and stuff, like for smoking meats and stuff.
Got it.
So this huge, like, I don't know the height of it, but it's like 12 foot by 12 foot by 20 foot high or something, structure. So it's cool to learn timber framing, and you're there, they teach all the stuff about timber framing as you do it.
Yeah, I think Ed was saying that the cupola that you guys worked on was going to be like 16 feet up.
I thought he said 19, but yeah, so 16 foot up.
Yeah, maybe that's the base of it, and then the top of it plus a roof, like you're 20 feet plus. It's tall.
It was the first time I did the timber in, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Let's see. It sounds like a lot of work.
Some people worked harder than others. I was one of the others, so I didn't but yeah, it's a lot of work. But it was a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to do it again.
Do that. Interesting.
See why people clamor to get in on him. But yeah. In order to find him, he'll post like after Maker Camp, he'll say, I think this year he's going to try and get the schedule out before Maker Camp. But he'll be like, the winter schedule's out or the extra events are out.
Mm-hmm. And then,
but like the group forge is like 25 or 30 people. The timber inn was only 35 people. So once it sells out, it sells out.
Okay, so it's limited.
You kind of have to want to get in on it, you know?
Yeah, and be able to commit in time to...
Yeah. And the makerspace classes, I think they're like up to 15.
Okay.
But it depends on what they're teaching, who's teaching, you know, and what you can fit in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the axe class was in that 12 to 15 as well.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think we had 9 in the silversmith class, 9 or 10 of us. It was a lot of fun.
Is that where Smitty decided to go down the jewelry making camp, or is that something different?
No, she had wanted to do it for a while. And then when the announcement came out before Maker Camp last year that Curtis was going to be there teaching, she's like, oh, I'm going to go to Maker Camp now. So then she went, she took Curtis's like demo class there. And she's like, I'm sold. And we found out then that Curtis was going to be teaching a winter class. So we're like, all right, let's do it. So then we took that class.
Nice.
And now she's way down the rabbit hole.
I saw some posts, I don't know, it was a few weeks ago or something. And I was like, ooh, maybe I should try my hand at silversmithing. And I actually went like looking at stuff. I was like, all right, no, time out. No more.
She has created an entire studio down here. I'll show it to you later.
Nice.
Well, it's on her thing. It's amazing what she's doing down here. It's cool.
Yeah.
But it is a rabbit hole. If you think woodworking's a rabbit hole, silversmithing is also a rabbit hole.
I believe that.
But it's cool what you can make with it. It's, like what she's doing here is awesome. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice.
It's fun. Nice.
Okay, did I see you did some like go-kart deal recently or something?
Yeah. Yep.
What was that? All I saw were like grown men riding these contraptions, for lack of a better word.
But there was women there too. It wasn't just men.
I didn't see many of them, but okay, I'll take your word for it.
They were there.
why women live longer than men.
Exactly. Riding contraptions. That was the word I used. Not vehicles.
Some of them were definitely contraptions. So Jimmy had bought up there, down the street from the Blackthorn. The Handels, who owned the Blackthorn, used to own a go-kart track, okay, which was like tourist event, and Jimmy DeResta bought it years ago.
Okay.
And he opens it up as a go-kart track one day a year for all makers to go. You bring a go-kart that either you built or you have or modified or whatever, and you go and you just ride it around his track. There's no like racing or, okay, or I mean no race. I was not one of those people.
Okay.
It's just a tiny little go-kart track. It's a lot of fun. It was my first time going. He's done it. I think this was like the third or fourth. I thought there'd be like maybe 10, 15 people who go.
Uh-huh.
It was a lot more people than that, but it was a lot of fun.
Cool.
I don't know how many people were there. Maybe 70, 100. I don't know.
It looked like a lot of people, and I saw like several different people post reels or stories or whatever showing different vehicles and different
things.
So
it was fun, but that's a one-day event. It's only a couple hours long. Like, I wouldn't come in from Ohio for that event.
Yeah, no way. Not a chance. Not a chance.
I mean, I'm three and a half, depending on the day. And I'm right on the cusp of almost too far. But it was a lot of fun.
Now, did you bring a contraption with you to ride? Or
I brought a little motorcycle. A little CT set.
Yeah.
So yes, that was a contraption.
Not a contraption. It runs fine.
It might have been built by Honda, but it's still, I mean, it's a 70cc motorcycle that could probably grind your knees sitting on sitting on the seat. Like,
yeah. It's been modified to 125cc.
Oh, you never said that.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to keep some of the secrets.
Oh, okay.
Going up against somebody with a 70cc, you got to be able to.
It's been modified to
take them out, you know. But yeah, it's fun.
I got to see what's happening with my battery here.
Uh-oh. Well, you do that. Let's head on over to the after show. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah. So we appreciate all of you listening. If you want to rate and review the show, that'd be awesome on whatever podcatcher of choice that you have. If you want to find Annette, you can find her at 513 Woodworks. She's a fantastic follow. She's constantly doing all sorts of new stuff, taking classes, showing off what she's learned. It's a phenomenal follow. 513 Woodworks on Instagram. If you want to find Tony, he's at Woodland Iron. I'm at Blackthorn Concepts. Both of us can be found at Working Hands Podcast on Instagram or Working Hands 3 on TikTok, as well as you can email us if you have anything to say via email at workinghandspodcast@gmail.com. With that, we ask that you share the show. It would be phenomenal. It'll help us tell all your friends. With that, we'll see you kids next week.
Later.
On to the afternoon.